geography. We will be starting with health. We have Kimberly Harding from she's presenting the project ORCID, and she's president of Mornak Innovation Partners. Welcome, Kimberly.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here to share with you this effort that I am developing with the Forest Center Partners of mine, both with the U.S. and international, called Project ORCID. So for the purposes of this presentation, I'm going to cover some of these points you see here on the slide, a little bit about myself and how I came up with the name of Project ORCID, some of my partnerships. Also, just to give you a little snapshot of what's going on in the global health arena as it relates to clinical health innovation and public health initiatives for low-income, middle-income, and emerging G7 markets. And then I'm going to take a deep dive into Project ORCID itself. And then from there, I'll share with you some of the technology resources that I'm utilizing with my partnerships. And then also extend an invitation to any of you out there in the audience that are interested in co-partnering with me on some great missions that I'm doing in the U.S. So a little bit about myself. I've been in healthcare for many years, and it's the passion of my life. I absolutely love it. And my vision statement is to alleviate suffering in the world by enabling the care team with the best tools of technology and intelligence to engage the patient for better outcomes and care. So that's in a nutshell, that's who I am, and that's what the company represents. In terms of my partnerships, from a U.S. perspective, I have some academic partners at Virginia Tech. We're going to hear a little bit more about what Virginia Tech is doing as part of Project ORCID. University of Maryland, at their ISU, their School of Information Management. Wonderful group of people there. And then my partnerships, my private partnerships, is with a company called SAN Business Consultants. I've been working with SAN for many years for the Department of Veteran Affairs in the U.S., also with when I was working at Florida Blue, which is a major health insurance company, and they'll also be working with me here as well. And then two NGOs, or non-government organizations, the Futures Group and Petrie International. These are two nonprofit organizations that are known worldwide for their innovative efforts as it relates to public health systems and being able to implement them in low and middle-income countries and emerging markets, as well as high-income countries. From an international perspective, I began my approach with Project ORCID by soliciting and securing partnerships in Africa, specifically the World Health Organization, the chief librarian for the region of Africa, will be participating in this, and then several universities, both in Central and Sub-Saharan Africa, and then also a partnership in India. So now let's talk a little bit about healthcare from a global perspective with e-health or health IT. And if you look at the slide here, there are three columns. This first column represents the use of paper to track and capture patient-level and population-level data within a region or country. The second column in the middle represents being able to capture that information in electronic formats, Excel or Word. And then the third column represents system-to-system transmission of data, whether it's structured or unstructured data. So this snapshot was taken from WHO in 2012. They generate these reports every couple of years. And as you can see, that we still have a major digital divide, even given the fact that we're talking about big data, which is really exciting today. But when we look at some of the pandemics that are hitting our areas worldwide, chronic disease and cure management, immunization, prevention and wellness, if you are able to facilitate the securing of patient-level data in a secure format, we won't be able to develop a fertile ground for innovation in these areas. Now, just to illustrate this a little bit more, this is a snapshot from WHO related to the worldwide ability of countries to be able to collect TB data, okay? And TB research has been going on for decades. There are two well-known vaccines that actually cure TB. However, even with that said, we still have regions, both in the Americas, in Africa, in Southeast Asia, where there's limited ability to collect that, still paper-based. Some of that information, even though it's collected electronically, there's no way of being able to ensure that there's proper data governance around that, let alone that you can transfer that and share that with other peers within that region. And just to make a little distinction between the dark green and the light green areas, the dark green areas assume that that country is able to collect both regular strains of TB, and then the lighter green is the drug-resistant strains. However, there's no way really actually validating that that's correct. For those countries that have light green, they're only able to collect data on patient populations that have the drug-resistant strain. Now, what that means is, which is a high risk, is that even though those patients were given the two top drugs that literally cure TB, they still are unable to be cured of that disease. So they have to go through a very rigorous two-year protocol to ask for a multi-drug protocol in order to ensure that they can even get alleviated from TB. So this is where the emphasis of Project Orchid came to be. Now, if you are a country and you have a high-risk patient population, whether it's with infectious disease or chronic disease, such as diabetes, hypertension, stroke, kidney disease, you name it, you have some great, bright innovators, epidemiologists that have an idea to be able to, you know, share their learnings with their peers. But you still have to go over the hurdle of being able to innovate. And given some of the regulatory frameworks in the Western world, for some of the low and emerging markets, it becomes almost impossible to be able to follow the rigor around the drug discovery model. So this is just a snapshot from the Food and Drug Administration about the amount of time it can take. I call this the happy path, between 10 to 15 years for an investigation of a new drug. This assumes that you have the right infrastructure, lab systems, health IT systems that connect to your researchers, to your patient populations, to your PIs, and to your investigational review boards. There are plenty of countries such as India, China, Brazil, and others, even in Mexico, where you're attempting to be on par with the West, with G7 countries to be able to participate in multinational trials. But if you don't have a robust e-health system to be able to do that, then you're not going to be able to share the victories of health innovation. And that's where Project Orchid came to be. The purpose of Project Orchid is to be able to bring together those key stakeholders that are focused on clinical trial and public health innovation at a local, regional, and multinational level. The Project Orchid platform is an open source, open science platform that regardless of, as long as you have an internet access, Project Orchid conceptually will provide a portal, a web portal, where you're able to conduct virtual collaboration with cohorts that have a shared interest in certain research areas. We focus not only on the multinational event area, but also global and regional. We also will provide tools and capabilities for investigational review boards or IRBs. I'm also going to show you some examples, some conceptual examples of patient engagement using smartphone or mHealth technology platforms and smart card technology. And then here at the bottom here, you'll see the little blue A. That's the open science community. We know that when doing clinical research, especially, that once you're able to capture some of that information, you can de-identify the patient-level information and then push that out and share those data abstracts with others who are trying to do similar research such as yours. So for example, if you're focusing on a new diabetic, type 2 diabetic drug, or tuberculosis, then you're able to abstract, create a registry, and then push that out while protecting the patient-level information. In addition to that, we share with you some of the capabilities that we're envisioning for clinical research librarians and informationists, and how we want to be able to provide them with robust tools so that they can generate their own digital library and assets, as well as registries. In addition to that, Project Orchid is focused on being able to harmonize the different regulatory policies that you'll need when you're trying to do multinational clinical innovation. Now, Project Orchid comes in two components. The first component is the innovation engagement framework. The second component is the collaboration platform. Now, the Innovation Engagement Framework focuses on enabling research groups to come together and to harmonize their regulatory policies, their business rules, their standard operating procedures, and then also the cultural dynamic, because there are going to be different cultural dynamics where you're doing multinational clinical trials and public health innovation. Once that's done, the output of that collaboration maturity model is to create a sustainable innovation model where all of the research cohorts agree. These are the innovation strategies we're going to use for clinical innovation. This is how we're going to sustain it from an operational perspective. And here are the quality assurance activities that we're going to do to ensure that we're in compliance from a regulatory perspective. Once that business model has been defined, then the collaboration platform, which is the actual technology platform, can be configured. The technology platform consists of three areas. A quality system network, which enables bi-directional clinical data exchange between cohorts in a secure gateway system. A protocol engine and virtual lab system. The protocol engine then, and give you the context, say for instance, you're working on that drug-resistant strain TB. And let's say that Mexico is working with India and Brazil to come up with combining their three best-known protocols. You're going to then take those rules, and in that rules engine will then push out the clinical decision support alerts that the care team needs, and then those clinical alerts can be sent out through a web portal or through a smartphone. It's just one example. And then also providing analytics as well and dashboards. Okay, just to help you understand a little bit more about the maturity model, because the technology, I don't want to oversimplify it. The true clinical innovation, in order for it to be sustainable, there has to be harmonization of the business rules. Because once you have that, then you can configure the technology to ensure that the roles and responsibilities are tracked in a virtual environment. Because sometimes when people set up a virtual environment, it becomes extremely difficult, especially from an auditing perspective, to ensure that people have the right roles, responsibilities, and access to the data. In this hierarchy, there are several levels. And this would be, again, a group, a multinational group, Mexico, India, Tanzania, and we'll just say Brazil, coming together on a clinical drug trial. And you want to come up with a new drug for a TB-resistant strain. There will be a collaboration meeting that's facilitated to focus on what are the regulatory drivers, how do you harmonize that? What are the organizational policy and ethics? Going all the way up to the ladder to the inspiration, what are the cultural dynamics? So once that's defined, then you can see over here to the right, it's then again harmonizing that across those cohorts so that it's sustainable, that you leverage each other's strengths, that you do risk mitigation for the weak areas of business processes. And then from there, the platform itself can be sustainable and agile to meet those needs. Now, the collaboration platform has seven key capabilities, and I'm going to briefly go through each of them. The quality system network, as I said earlier, really is the base. It enables those cohorts, regardless of where they are in the world, to be able to exchange, through a gateway, clinical data information at the patient level. Okay, using protocols such as HL7, which is a health level 7. It's a standard that is utilized of over 90-95% of all health IT vendors around the world. So that includes the gateway, and that can be configured. Then a clinical trial and population health report called rules engine. This rules engine can be defined in a scripting language, and we're utilizing all open source tools because our goal here is to make sure that these tools are financially sustainable as well in a platform as a service model. So given the types of different protocol rules that you may have for an infectious disease protocol, it could be an oncology or cancer research protocol, or a public health immunization protocol, you want to be able to put that information in, and then it will do the programming in order to push out the alerts, the reminders to the entire care team, depending on the trigger and the processes that you want to put in place. Now, for some organizations and for some regions of the world, you don't have stable civil registration of vital statistics to accurately reflect births and deaths, having unique identifiers. We take that for granted, especially when you're doing clinical trial data management. You don't have to look at patients. So we established that as well. Not for the really cool 3D analytics, we will be providing what's called a multi-channel open world virtual lab. And that's a funny and funky way of saying, you know, when you look at video games, and you've seen some examples of that already today, but you'll be able to create your avatars, including genomic avatars, to be able to share that data in that virtual lab. So say, for instance, you're doing preclinical trials, animal trials, and you want to develop a mouse avatar, okay? In that mouse avatar, you can collect that information and share that, those findings, then you reduce the rework of other cohorts in different parts of the world because you know that mouse model works. This is technology that's already out there, but it's so high priced, very few organizations can actually afford a mouse avatar. So why we're using open source? Open source then allows for a financially sustainable and accessible avatar environment that you can create for various kinds of organization. On the right side of our case report, reporting form tools, using web forms, again, if there are certain checklists that your researchers like to use, we would then transform them into the various languages that are used, whether it's French, German, English, Spanish, Swahili. We are using a language called Drupal, and there are literally hundreds of languages that are translated into Drupal, and that's what we'll be using. And then also biosurveillance and data monitoring. So in a near real-time environment, we know that in some remote areas of the world, even though that there are mobile devices, we'll still be able to provide near real-time batch refresh of that data. So if you have remote clinics in India or in Tanzania, or in areas of Mexico, or even in the Alleghenies of the U.S. and Pennsylvania, we're able to share that information and be able to synchronize that in near real time. I already talked about the virtual human and animal avatars, and this is an opportunity. When the maturity model comes towards innovation, if you want to share genomic data, then that's possible as well. Okay, so a little bit about the system architecture that we're going to be using. Really quickly from left to right, we will be using cloud computing, and we know that regionally from country to country, from a data rights perspective, again, based off of the data governance rules of that organization, you can determine if you want a logical or physical pointer to that data, and also to ensure that at the patient level, their data is secure as well. Again, using as much open source hardware as possible. And then from a data architecture perspective, so again, it's very different from different sciences. So when you talk about clinical information, you still are talking about paper-based, unstructured data where people, at the most, can maybe image it, create a PDF file. How do you use that with structured data in an electronic health record? It becomes very difficult. However, with our data architecture governance, we're able to take that unstructured data, parse it, and then put it in structured format so that it can be consumable in another machine-readable system. From an open-source software standards perspective, we'll be using Drupal and OpenGL and X3D. X3D are the standards that are used in the Web 3D Consortium. Dr. Nicholas Polis is part of our group. He is the chair of that particular standards group, and he actually defines the standards for 3D in healthcare and other areas. And then also health interoperability standards. So it's not enough to have big data and be able to push it out, but be able to have system-to-system integration, whether it's a medical device, electronic health record, a laboratory information system, or your basic database. There are standard interoperability frameworks that we'll be using so that we can capture that information utilizing the Integrated Health Enterprise Profile, or IHE. IHE is a nonprofit organization in the U.S. that's referenced around the world. And they have various domains of IHE, some focusing on just profiles related to cardiovascular data collection, some on quality, some on radiology, some on cancer and other areas. We'll be utilizing those IHE profiles because the vendors around the world utilize them for clinical data exchange. And then last but not least, your basic classic enterprise architecture frameworks as well. Now, when it comes to developing systems around clinical innovation, especially in the regulatory area, and even for care management systems, for grants now, they want you to be able to develop these systems utilizing evidence-based methods. And what I mean by that is, for some of the electronic health records that GE creates or that Epic creates for our hospital systems, they ensure that the technology that the doctors and nurses are going to use will enable them to use that through what's called meaningful use, meaning that when I'm ready to check out that patient and discharge them, my system has to be able to create discharge notes and instructions and send that to them when they go home. I may also want to make sure that that health information management system reminds them to fill a prescription or reminds them to go and follow up with their provider when they're discharged in a week after they come out from the hospital. We'll be using some of those same frameworks to ensure that Project ORCID meets the standards, not only from a regional perspective, but from a WHO perspective. And WHO has what's called the Health Technology Assessment Framework. That Health Technology Assessment Framework has 9 different domain areas, again, to verify that the system that we hope to be able to build with Project ORCID aligns with social, legal, and ethical areas that WHO and all of its partners agree upon. Now we're going to get into some of the use cases that we hope to be able to do proof of concept on. This first one is for an infectious disease clinical trial collaboration. So I know we use the example of tuberculosis. It could be any other kind of infectious disease. It could be measles, it could be the bird flu, swine flu. But you'll see, let me give you a look back there. Give you a walk through that. At the very top, you'll see a very helpful illustration of the infrastructure. From the left, you'll see the clinical trial rules engine. So that's where the cohort has come together and said, you know, we're going to implement our clinical trial in this manner. We're going to script it, and then we're going to push out these alerts and utilize these steps across our cohort. The second piece that you see is the Open World Metaverse platform. This is the 2D, 3D platform that enables the research teams to come together to do the modeling of the clinical trial. And you can do this as early as possible so that you can reduce the rework when you get to human trials. In fact, you can do this even before you get to animal trials. This 3D environment allows you to use genomic data as well. Then the real-time communication platform, similar to Cisco and Skype and things of that nature, allows you to be able to use open source tools to collaborate in that environment. And then in the center, the goal is to have a composite of a potential genomic avatar that that whole cohort can study from. So can you imagine if you're getting information from your patient populations, from Mexico, Brazil, India, Tanzania, and you want to make sure you want to track the side effects of this new TB drug. Maybe some people have kidney failure. Maybe some people have headaches. Maybe there are fatalities related to it. You can track what the organ systems as you're doing that through the 3D models. Now, as you can see along the left-hand side, I have just some examples of countries. We have South Africa, Swaziland, India, and the U.S. It could be any. So I want your mind to expand upon whatever that cohort could be. If you have a common theme, a common goal of being able to identify and solve issues related to infectious disease or chronic disease, then Project ORCID is able to facilitate that innovation activity. Now we're going to talk about maternal and child health population health, or public health initiatives. The great thing about maternal and child health innovation now around the world is that everyone is really high and heavy on the mHealth platforms. There are tons of grants out there, both in the US and the UK and other areas, because we know even in the most remote areas of the world, people have a phone. And you will find that a lot of epidemiologists and physicians are pushing these alerts to these particular critical public health programs to capture and track as much information as they can. The challenge with that is they're unable to maintain a consistent longitudinal patient-level record. And so even though you're able to push out a reminder, please go get your shot so that your child is protected from measles, mumps, and rubella, you're still unable to see maybe the effects of other things related to that family medical history because you're unable to capture that in a data store. The goal of the maternal and child population health scenario here is to create not only the mobile health platform, but to also, at the very top here, create the rules engine so that you can push out that information. So the work that we're doing with the Futures Group and DTRIA International, they'll provide that subject matter expertise. And then also to the right, we'll be pushing that information into a digital library. This is where research librarians and informations can share their learnings as they're developing and collecting the outcomes research from this. And then also for the public health, the Ministry of Health departments within countries, they can create their own registry. Now, there are some organizations, there's some countries and some regions, even in the U.S., where they're unable to even create consistent immunization records for the patient population. This is one way you'll be able to do that and lock down that information. Here's another example for maternal and child health using smart card technology. The reason why I want to use it here is because, especially in remote areas, if they don't even have a phone, if they're able to go to specific remote clinics, a smart card, like a regular bank card, can be used using active and passive tags, using RFID technology, to track and collect information on that family. And that as they go from clinic to clinic, you're just going to need a smart reader to be able to produce results and then pull that information up into your registries. And then we have another example of a clinical imaging trial. So say, for instance, you're doing cancer research. And with cancer research, breast cancer, prostate cancer, or lung cancer, there's a lot of radiology studies that are utilized for that as well, too. Again, in some regions of the world, no CT scanners, no MRI scanners. But if I want to be able to, look at various images, then this will also support that. I'm going to quickly go here. Now, for librarians as well too, we'll be providing tool sets related to creating a shared knowledge network where they can have their own logical instances of the information locally and then share that around. And then this next slide, not only that, but we'll be able to push out that information. They can publish that to open science communities, to journal repositories, to share that information via smartphones as well. And you can have your own unique instances. And for more information on this, please feel free to give me, touch base with me after the presentation. Really quickly, we will be using a current radiology protocol tool that's currently in testing with the Department of Veteran Affairs. And with that, there are a lot of great tools associated with allowing physicians to collaborate with each other for consults and be able to create their own protocols as well, not only for radiology, but for other medical domains. And then here's an example of a protocol library. Also being able to capture and track medical history for patients, even if the physician does not have an electronic health record, Project Org can provide that portal for them, as well as patient history. And then also for regulatory and clinical alerts, Project Org can be able to push those out to ensure that the systems that are being used for public health initiatives and clinical trials are meeting all the requirements for that particular region, as well as pushing out alerts to the staff itself to ensure for compliance. Virginia Tech, we're going to be utilizing their Visionarium Lab. Really neat. Again, the Mirror Worlds, they have a tremendous supercomputing lab that we'll be utilizing. And I was going to show really, really quick. I don't think I have any time, but very fast. Show you just an example of some of the 3D work that we'll be utilizing in Project Orchid. Again, this is all open source. So because it's open source, we're going to save a lot of money to be able to share some of that information. Okay, and so that's pretty much it. Right now, I'm in the process of submitting for several grants with my partners. We have one coming up in June and one in September. I also have a white paper on this, so if you're interested, please feel free to give me a tap me on the shoulder, touch base with me after this conference. Thank you very much.